It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here to dispel rumors, but also to talk about Google's announcements at I.O. The next phone from Microsoft will be Android-based. That's no rumor. It's true, and a whole lot more. Windows Weekly is coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 368, recorded June 25th, 2014. Rogue rumor mongers. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Windows. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to Harry's.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code Windows when you check out. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus free 3-day shipping on your final frame purchase, go to warbyparker.com/windows. WARBYPARKER.com/windows. Better late than never. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Microsoft and all the cool stuff happening up there in that little town of Redmond, Washington. We have experts, however, to debug, defend, and dethrone. I'm not sure which Mary Jo is going to do today, but she is here, Mary Jo Foley from AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Good to have you, the ZDNet blog.
I'm going to debrief. That's what I'm
doing. Debrief. That's a very important part of what you do.
Debrief. Nice.
Debrief. That's what Paul did earlier this morning when he got ready for the show, actually. Paul Thurrott is here.
I actually have no pants on. You're correct.
I'm the supersite for Windows. Winsupersite.com and also the author of many great books, too many to count, but the latest, the Windows 8.1 book at windows81book.com.
Sir, why are you wearing a suit?
Well, I dressed up. I thought Larry Page was going to be here, but I guess not.
Nice.
I hosted TNT because Mike Elgin and Jason Howell and Gina Trapani and Jeff Jarvis all decided that they would go to San Francisco to sit and listen to over 2.5 hours of mind-numbing stuff from Google I.O.
I wonder what the line for the men's room looks like right now in that convention center.
It's longer than the ladies' room, I can assure you.
It must look like that the bridge in New York when the guy shut down the lane and
Governor Christie Lane. Yeah. Well, they said with great pride there are 20% women here at the Google I/O conference.
Yeah,
that's wow. This show is 33% women. So
right.
There you go.
I get a little girly sometimes myself. Yeah. So. I
mean, we don't know what kind of chromosomes Paul has, but so what did you, I guess, you know, we should, there's really three big kind of non-Windows stories, but something you probably want to talk about a little bit, which is Google I.O. and then the two big Supreme Court decisions that came down this morning. Supreme Court said Aereo is violating the network's copyrights. That's going to put Aereo out of business.
One, common sense. I thought that was always going to be the case, but.
Yeah, it's obvious that Aereo designed, Barry Diller even said it, designed the business carefully
to skirt the laws
by creating dime-sized antennas
and by the way, I think that was the key to the ruling. It's the intent.
Yeah.
Right? I think that was how that went. So a lot of people are going to disagree with that assessment, by the way. I understand that. But as much as I thought, I signed up for the service. I was kind of curious about it. Common sense look at what they're doing is pretty much all.
Basically,
it's like the Napster defense. You know, we're not.
Yeah, it's not. You could use it for downloading Linux distributions,
which are free. So no one's hurt.
Nobody's hurt. I think that they the Supreme Court really said this is basically a cable company. That's what cable companies do. Cable companies are required by law to pay retransmission fees.
I was going to say, do they pay for it? I bet they do.
They pay retransmission fees. This was the crux of the matter.
I bet they do.
The local
broadcasters and the networks that own them said, no, you've got to pay us retransmission fees just like the cable company does. Yeah. And Aereo says, but wait a minute. We're just putting antennas up. What the user does has nothing to do with us. And the Supreme Court said that doesn't really fool anybody. They did rule. That was a 6-3 decision. Justice Scalia, of all people, writing a dissent.
I know.
They did rule unanimously, 9-0, that law enforcement would need a warrant to search your cell phone in most cases. And that is good news.
Yeah.
And I think that's another common sense one where it needs to follow the real world conventions. Do they need that to look in the trunk of your car? Do they need, actually, they don't. Do they? They need, or do they?
Yeah.
If they pull you over, if they have some probable cause.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe probable cause.
They look at everything. They look in your
You're backpack, in a stop and frisk city, yeah.
We are, yeah.
No word on the Luis Suarez biting decision, however.
I got so excited when I saw Suarez all over Twitter, but then I realized it wasn't Daniel Suarez, and I got bored. But Google I.O., I think there are some things we can talk about there that are directly related to Windows. Because the only time Windows ever came up was when they were trying to explain how Windows was the old way and we're the new way.
They didn't. It's funny. They mentioned Office without ever using the word Microsoft.
I know, which I found a little... Yeah, okay. So I guess Office is the Kleenex of Office productivity suites or whatever. But, you know, they Google Drive for Work, I thought it bears some mentioning. The native editing of Office Docs in Google Docs and Sheets and whatnot bears some mentioning. I mean, Mary Jo,
how do you do that? Has Microsoft opened those document formats to the point where...
It's funny you should mention that. There was some news around that today, wasn't there?
No, that's not exactly that.
Okay.
Today they opened up an SDK for OpenXML, but I don't think that's related to what they're
not doing. Related to the Office Docs. Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay, never mind. Nope. Yeah.
So what Google said, though, is that you can be working in Google Docs, Google Office, Google's whatever they call it, Drive, open and edit natively a Microsoft Word document. And then save it back out.
Thanks to their purchase of QuickOffice is the way they described it.
Right.
And then they used the word upconvert, which I think was the little knife.
That was a dig.
The ribs, you know.
Upconvert, if you wish.
We'll take this dirty, awful Office document format, and we'll upconvert it to the beautiful, pristine Google Docs format.
Simpler Docs format.
You know, the one that everyone uses.
Right. Well, that was another thing they said, and I kind of wondered what your thought was on it. They pointed out that 190 million people, they implied use Google Apps, but really said 190 million people use Google Drive.
Google Drive.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how many of those are people that are automatically backing up photos from your phone, which I know technically goes to Google Plus / Picasa, but come on, they don't have different services, really. It's the same thing. I mean, so I wonder about that.
That'd be a nice number to know.
I pointed this out on Twitter, but you know, when you have over a billion active users of Android, only 1/5 of them using your cloud storage is actually not necessarily great.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
you know, I bet a lot of those people are using Dropbox or, you know, whatever other service.
I think every Gmail account uses Google Drive, doesn't it? Isn't that where the Gmail gets stored? If that's the case.
Yeah, I'm sure they use it for attachments like Microsoft does with OneDrive. Right. If it's a big attachment, you know.
They also talked about cloud services for developers. Now, that was the end of the keynote and the part we kind of faded away from. But that's
the Azure part.
As you pointed out, this is all stuff Microsoft does, too.
I can assure you we've had those features for some time.
Yeah.
I don't think it's aimed at Microsoft, though. It's aimed more at Amazon, the king of this stuff, right?
Yeah. Sure.
But Microsoft's had, as a couple of the MVPs were saying, they've had all those developer tools for Azure already. You can already do the things they were talking about.
I don't begrudge them this. I mean, they obviously intend to have a major cloud platform. They have to put that stuff in place. Like, I'll point to Raphael's comments again. How did they not already have some of this stuff? You know, it is kind of amazing. And that goes across the board. All the Google Play stuff, the features in Android, blah, 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 on and on and on. It's like, how'd they get this far and not have some of this stuff already?
Well, you know, because they're coming at it from a different place, probably, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Google's cloud, the way Google started their cloud out was a very different kind of a cloud than Azure or Amazon. Yeah, you know, they kind of came at it from, remember when they started out with Google, I think it was called, I forget what they called it back in the day, but it was definitely like not the same thing as Azure.
Yeah, compute cluster. And then they only added a code engine like last year.
Right.
So all of this stuff is fairly new for them.
Yeah. Yep.
And you mentioned Amazon. I think it's we should be fair to say that Amazon,
they did this first.
They did all this
by accident.
Yeah,
really. I mean, if you read the Everything Store, the book,
I know it's crazy how it happened.
They fell into it.
Yeah, it's nuts. And
although you could credit Jeff Bezos,
imagine
with
if Walgreens
some foresight.
Had done this. It's right. That nuts.
It's kind of like that. Yeah, we're a merchandiser. Yeah. We've got these servers. We're not really using them all the time. What else could we do?
Could we sell? Yeah, right. It's like subletting.
Right.
You know, is there some way we could make a little money on the side?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and that's kind of how Azure also kind of came to be, too, if you think about it, because Microsoft was running data centers for Xbox, right? And they were running their own services in the cloud. And then they were like, oh, wait, we have all this extra capacity. We can do this, too, right? So I think it came of a similar place and kind of a background.
And, I mean, that's how CompuServe started, is that H&R Block realized that they weren't using their computers after April 15th.
Yeah.
And they said, what could we do? I mean, this is how timesharing began. So it's not so, not that, I don't know. All of this stuff is fairly new. And what's interesting is that everybody, including Facebook, is getting into it. Everybody wants to have a developer platform. Apple, Facebook, they're the newest entries. Amazon did it first, then Microsoft, Google's doing it. And then there's Rackspace and a million other people. And the good news is it's great. It's a great time to be a app developer because you can get up and running, as they were pointing out with Secret, for nothing. Have a working product that you can then go raise money on. And that's a lot easier. All right. Anything else to say about Google I.O. before we move on to...
I would. This
about,
is in the notes. I just
how about
I would
those
point
tiles?
Out there.
How about those tiles?
Yeah, yeah.
We call them widgets, Mary Jo. They're called widgets.
And the design language—it's just like Nature.
By the way, so obviously it looks a little bit like Windows Phone. It's got grid and all that. So, I found that to be uninspiring. I mean, iOS 7 was similar in the way that it's very stark looking, and it's super different from what came before. I mean, this isn't super different from Android today, but. Universal app like ability to have the one UI across multiple devices is fine. The ability to run Android apps on Chrome OS, isn't that Windows 8? I mean, you have a desktop operating system, and you're adding a mobile platform to it.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's Windows 8.
Get ready because they're going to do it to Windows too. That's that whole Chrome app thing. That they introduced on Windows.
Oh, no. I they've already done it to Windows. That's my point. That is Windows 8. I mean, it's Windows 8.
But but Google's done it to Windows. I mean, if you're running Chrome, Google's,
yes.
You have Chrome apps on Windows and Macintosh, and it's going to work the same, I would imagine.
As the mini computer in this scenario, we get the dog food there so we can move users ahead to the modern platform, I guess. But
I think for Android users, it's great. It means your app. I'm not sure how it works because they were a little mysterious, or maybe I just misunderstood it. But it sounds like if you have an Android app, the UI can show up. I don't know if you need to install a Chrome extension or what, but the UI can show up.
I'm sure it's
Chrome.
Just like a VM remote app or something. I mean, yeah.
I do think that there's now getting to be a kind of commonality in mobile interfaces that Apple, Google, Microsoft all are kind of converging on a point of a flatter but more lively interface with cross. Now, this is one thing I don't think Windows Phone does as well. Apple's just started doing this, the idea that apps can kind of intercommunicate in such a way that they can show up within one another. That's an interesting idea.
Obviously, in a sandbox mobile environment, you need to have some separation between the apps, but you also need to have a communication channel.
Right, inter-app communication, which Microsoft pioneered.
Yeah,
with
they have contracts and they have different ways for apps to interact, share through the share charm and all that kind of stuff. So it's I would just say that's kind of a logical evolution of that stuff. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's you have to do it somehow. It looked okay. I wasn't blown away by the UI stuff. For whatever reason,
Microsoft. Okay, let's talk about Android Wear. Microsoft's doing watches.
Are they?
Aren't they?
think they are. Wait, nobody still has one.
Uh-huh. Well, nobody has an Android Wear either.
So,
they haven't even said publicly they're doing a watch. So.
I just heard something about this recently, that they are working on something. I also heard that it wasn't necessarily fantastic, which is a little depressing. But I don't know what you could do. I mean, when you look at what Android, what they're doing with this stuff, I mean, to me, this seems like the logic. You know, the Apple, the way they're expected to do it, integration with their own platform and phone makes sense, you know. I mean, what else could it do?
Right. So everybody will have watches. Everybody will have wearables.
Right.
We'll have them too. Sure. Yeah. Everybody's going to have that.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the notes, your notes, to make sure I got everything. I think that's it, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. Right. Just maybe the unlimited storage thing. That's kind of interesting.
Well, that was for business, but $10 a month per user. I mean, you're already paying that for apps. So basically, I think what they're saying is, you get unlimited storage as an apps user, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, unlike Microsoft, I think it's fair to say, unlike Microsoft, that's what they have to offer is storage. You know,
yeah.
Whereas Microsoft explicitly said, like, we don't want to sell you storage. You know, it's going to be like a end to end experience kind of thing. And so they're doing the whole Office deal. Like, you get Office and everything, and you can, you know, share it between PCs and devices. And I think that's more interesting for people than just storage. You know. But I could be wrong. You know, I 1 terabyte of storage on OneDrive for business, 1 terabyte on OneDrive if you have Office 365 home or personal is, you know, not unlimited, but it's not shabby, you know.
Yeah.
So I have to say, though, I mean, I don't know if a terabyte for most people. I have a terabyte. I've never come close to filling it up. That is, in effect, unlimited, I guess.
Yeah, that would be the argument. Yeah. I mean,
now they did say encryption in transit and on server.
Right.
I don't know if OneDrive.
Well, that's part. That's that, if it doesn't do it now, it will. I mean, Microsoft, right, like Google, has agreed to do this exact kind of thing.
And this is in response to the data. NSA. Yeah,
exactly.
The question is it trust no one? In other words, does Google have the keys? Does Microsoft have the keys? Or do you and only you have the keys?
Yeah.
I would hope it would be the latter.
There, that is related to kind of an interesting point here. There was a slide where they listed the percentage of startups that were going Google. You know, it was a pretty big number, like 67% or something like that, 60%, whatever it was. And I think that's a problem for Microsoft. And I do think that's real. That, you know, if you're a new company, a couple of guys in a garage, or you're starting, you know, you're going to write mobile apps or whatever you're doing. You know, you're not buying servers. You're not doing on-premise infrastructure. You're doing cloud services. You're doing Gmail. You're doing Google Apps. And, you know, for this kind of new generation of people, this Microsoft Office compatibility stuff might not really be a huge deal. Microsoft has a big advantage for traditional companies that want to move to the cloud because they offer those kinds of solutions. But for these kind of new guys, kids coming out of school where they use a lot of Apple devices and Google services, that natural kind of built-in advantage doesn't exist anymore. And I actually do think that is a concern for Microsoft, you know, that Office advantage isn't so much of an advantage necessarily for younger people. I mean, I view it as an advantage. I use Office every day. I think it's a big deal. But, you know, increasingly, I think for younger people, that may not be the case. So that's something we always have to keep an eye on, too.
No, but they have to offer it for... us legacies.
Business.
And business.
Right?
Yeah, because business is expected. Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see who gets there first, because Microsoft is rushing to get Office for Android out, right? So
yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like maybe they're going to beat them, maybe they're not. Right. And will users prefer that solution from Microsoft, even if it has that catch where you have to subscribe to Office 365, which is what we think it's going to have, or not?
I work for a giant company that's kind of like a Viacom type of thing, where they have holdings in all these different areas that have nothing to do with what I do. So I think of my company as what I do, which is technology, specifically Microsoft related or whatever. But every once in a while, you'll have a meeting and people from other parts of the company will be there. And this didn't happen this year, it was last year sometime. But someone across the table at a meeting at my company actually said, "Hey, you know, Google gives away this like spreadsheet thing online. It's fantastic. Have you ever used this?
Wow.
You can collaborate with people."
And wow.
Everyone's looking at this person like, "Really? Like, seriously?" And that's the kind of mindset or mentality or depth of understanding of what's available, however you want to say it, that you need to deal with in the real world, you know. So I don't know. A lot of Microsoft guys would look at this Google stuff and say, oh, you know, don't worry about it. We have this stuff. We have Office. It's awesome. And it is awesome. But
you know, the iPhone's never going anywhere. It's far too expensive.
Right. We don't People don't want to touch
the screens.
That's not
the way they are, though, now. Yeah.
No, they have. Yeah. In fact, didn't they mention was it Microsoft's going to do Android Wear? They mentioned Microsoft in some context here at the keynote. And I thought, wow, that's the new open Microsoft.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, they're doing the Microsoft, the Nokia X phone. That's Android.
Right. I was thinking, I wonder how many people in Microsoft are tuned into this keynote, and not because of competitive, but because they're actually developing software and services on top of Android.
A lot, right? Yep. That's an important point. And again, I think a lot of people who even know a lot about Microsoft don't think of Microsoft that way either. They're being a lot more open to other platforms. Absolutely.
Just say for most of them, you know, I used to fire up Word. I own Word. I bought a 365 subscription, but I rarely fire it up because mostly I don't. And even Mary Jo doesn't. Mostly we don't need all those features. We just want to put down some text.
Yep.
You're part of the problem, Mary Jo.
I do use Office Online a lot, though, like Word Online and PowerPoint Online, Excel Online. I use those.
Really?
But I don't really need the full apps. I don't need that stuff.
Right.
Wow. I would feel naked without Word. I need Word. I have Word running all day
long. Well, you write books, too. I mean, if you're
writing different. Your publisher wants the books in Word. Yeah. I'll tell you one person who was definitely watching at Microsoft, Satya Nadella.
Yep.
Sure.
We're probably surrounded by his C-level executives taking notes.
Sure.
Probably in OneNote.
Well, I don't think it was Google Docs, but maybe. You never know.
Yep.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Surface Pro. I'm very curious. It did come out on the 25th. Is it today? No, last 20th. Week.
Yep.
20th.
Yep.
I guess they fixed the battery thing, but we're going to find out and a whole lot more. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley here. We're talking about Windows. It's Windows Weekly time. Our show brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. If you're in business, you need ShareFile. I use it all the time. Every week to share files. Clever name. Let's put it this way. If you're still sending email attachments, if you're sending contracts or PowerPoints or, documents of any kind via email, that's a bad idea for so many reasons. First of all, we always say don't open email attachments because even if they come from someone you know, they're often a vehicle for viruses. So that means your recipient is going to be going, well, I don't know, should I open this? It isn't secure for you either. It's like sending a postcard. It's visible every step of the way on every server that it hits. And nowadays, these files are so big that, you know, a 10-megabyte file on many email servers is going to get bounced back. 10 megabytes. Share file goes up to 10 gigabytes. You can send big files. You can keep control of those files. You could say when they can be opened, by whom, how many times they can be downloaded. And here's the key. You're not sending attachments, not using up bandwidth, sending those files across the Internet. You're sending a secure link, and that secure link you maintain control of, and that's what's so great about ShareFile. You can even use it to get files from people, to request files in the same easy way. They do not need to have a ShareFile account, just you. Visit ShareFile.com. Citrix ShareFile is the solution for business, for people who want to share files in business. If you see at the top of the screen a little thing that says podcast listeners, I invite you to click that. That's the try it free link. I'm gonna set it up so you can get 30 days free. Click the podcast listeners link and use our offer code Windows for 30 days free. And when you do, make sure you put in your industry because they'll customize it for industry that you're in. HIPAA compliant if you're in the medical industry. SEC regulation compliant if you're in the financial services industry. Your free trial gives you 20 gigabytes of storage, which is really nice. And that's how I use ShareFile. I keep a ShareFile folder on the desktop. It's automatically synchronized with ShareFile on the cloud. In so many ways, Citrix ShareFile is the way to go. It's how I send out audio files, often too big to send via email. That would be the wrong way to do it. I'm sending out 10 commercials or 10 IDs. There's no way I'm going to send those as an attachment. I use ShareFile. It's great. Citrix ShareFile. Visit ShareFile.com. Click the microphone at the top there. It says podcast listeners and use the offer code Windows. Windows Weekly on the air. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Now, you don't, your Surface Pro 3s are now the standard. They're not special edition, right?
Right.
Did you get a firmware update to fix that power?
I got it several times.
Just in case.
I thought it was a little odd, but whatever.
Yeah. We did, though. We got it, which was good. I know everybody was a doubter last week on the show, but I was saying, nope, we're going to get it right before. And we got it right
like the 20th?
It was literally 7 hours to go.
Wow.
Yeah. Right? It was late in the afternoon that Thursday, I think. Yeah.
And did it fix the power problems?
Yeah, for me it did.
Uh-oh. I mean, Mary Jo seems equivocal.
It did for me, but I've heard from a couple people who said they're still having a date time issue where it's not showing the correct date time. After they applied it. So I would say yes. I haven't heard en masse people having this problem, but I am going to reserve judgment a little bit.
So, I had some weird problems with Surface Pro 3 over the past couple weeks, and I contacted Microsoft. There was this thing where, we're sending memory dumps back and forth trying to figure out what it is, and it was wireless networking related, which is kind of strange. It turned out that my problems were in part related to, to two things. One is I had enabled Hyper-V, which is the virtualization platform, which is not compatible with Connected Standby. And I did that for, in my case, with Visual Studio. But, could picture IT pros would enable it for whatever reason to run virtual machines. So I wasn't seeing the power management.
Did you just go like that?
So, yeah, that was my, it's like a paragraph division. okay. Just the insert paragraph right here. So you don't have Connected Standby. So what happens is you have Hibernate, right? And that means that when you open the Surface, it doesn't come on immediately. It doesn't act like a device. It doesn't act like the way it used to. And that's confusing. And why isn't this working? And it's because of Hyper-V. And so I published an article about how to get around that and how to fix that. And okay, fine. That was good. But I was having another problem, and I don't know that this is why, but I haven't written about this. So I'll just tell people this. If you have a Surface Pro 3, this is something to look at. I mentioned the memory dump and the notion that it was related somehow to the wireless networking hardware. There's a feature in Windows 8 where you can mark a wireless network adapter as being a metered account. And when you do that, you can then turn on a little display in the pane that will show you how much data is being used by that connection. And the reason you might do that is because maybe you have a phone that's a metered account, obviously, and you're using that to share your internet connection, and you don't Yeah, but I enabled that on the internal Wi-Fi adapter for some reason. And actually, I could be completely wrong about this. I think I did it on another PC so that I could take a screenshot of it for the book, and that it synced that setting to Surface Pro 3, but I'm not 100% positive. It's not something I would normally do because there's two things you have to change in the configuration of the wireless network adapter to see that. And I think that might have been related to it, because ever since I put it back to the way it's supposed to be, I've had no problems at all. Like, power management has worked exactly the way it's supposed to. If it's under some number of hours, remember, you've used it, you close it, it goes to the connected standby, an hour goes by, you open it, comes right back out, it works like a device. Now it's almost been a week now. It's worked, I don't want to say perfectly, but it's been perfect basically ever since. So that might have fixed it. I can't explain it, why that would be a problem, but.
And you weren't the only one having the problem too, because I remember on Twitter people were saying, I can't get the connected standby / instant go thing to work. So
For a lot of people, if they were using Hyper-V, that was the moment they were like, oh, of course. Because Hyper-V is a server feature. And in Windows 8, they brought it to the client. And in doing so, they added some functionality to it that wasn't originally in Hyper-V, like it integrates and works with wireless network types. Originally, it was wired only. It works with the basic power management schemes that are available in the client, meaning normal sleep, like I don't remember the exact state names, but non-connected standby sleep. and also hibernation. So it works with those. But it doesn't work with connected standby. Connected standby is a newer technology. It's more sophisticated. It's possible they can adapt it down the road. They're looking into that. But, you know, once you hear that that's what the reason, it's like, oh, right, of course. I mean, it as soon as you understand that it's Hyper-V, that actually makes sense. You know, it didn't occur to me. I use Hyper-V in Visual Studio. You need it for Windows Phone development because the emulated phone that comes up in Visual Studio is a Hyper-V virtual machine.
And there's also, we should bring this up because I don't think a lot of people saw this. On Microsoft's Windows Experience blog, if you do a search for Instant Go, A Better Way to Sleep, they talk a lot about this, what's now called Instant Go that used to be called Connected Standby.
Instead of hibernation?
Yeah.
Isn't it hibernation that's the problem?
Instead of Connected Standby,
Yeah, I think it's I think the problem is almost like the transitions between these power management states.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I know I was telling Paul on my Acer Windows 8.1 machine, they added an extra power state that lets me just open the cover and suddenly that thing is on no matter how long it's been in like hibernation.
That.
Yeah,
love that.
And it's what's great. That called again? Yeah.
It's called hybrid like sleep? Hybrid something. Hybrid sleep. Yeah. And we don't have that, I don't think, on Surface devices.
You won't have that if you have connected standby, right?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, if you disable connected standby, you still don't get it. So I wonder if you were to install Hyper-V on your computer, if that would disable hybrid sleep. I don't know.
I wonder. I don't want to disable it.
Let's try it, Mary Jo. What could go wrong?
No, we're not trying it. We're not trying it.
Let me understand. This stuff aside, or I don't know how bad this stuff is, but you still like the Surface Pro 3, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if they fixed it sufficiently, that it's you're happy?
It's not replacing my Acer.
It's not.
Nope.
Paul, is it replacing your MacBook? Because I've got
Leo, nothing, as you know, nothing can replace a MacBook. But
I've got 6.5.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to use this when I travel, absolutely, because it's very thin and light, which I love, and the screen looks great. The battery life is good. You know, I like it a lot. I mean,
you can now get $650 for your MacBook Air.
Up to $650.
Yeah,
bucks.
Would you explain how that works and what Airs and how and what I get? And...
Yeah, we can't. But
yeah. Is that up to the decision up to the store manager?
This one is worth $65.
What?
Yeah. So you have to bring your MacBook Air into a physical Microsoft store.
Okay.
They are going to be the ones who tell you how much you get for it.
Okay.
Do they have like a
big
online.
Wheel that they spin?
Right. Yeah, we don't really know because it doesn't say online how they determine this.
I looked and, it just and says looked and looked and looked.
No, it doesn't say. Doesn't,
yeah, they're not going to say.
Nope.
At the discretion of the store
manager.
Yeah,
we don't know
which
models.
Yeah. But up to.
I have a really old one that my daughter's using, and she actually runs Windows 7 on it.
Oh, that's a good use for it.
And if it was $650, I would have brought that thing in because it's like a Core 2 Duo probably.
Right.
You know, 11-inch model. Kind of piece of junk.
Has anybody in the chat room, taken advantage of this offer? And can you tell us what you got? Somebody said a Best Buy gave me $260 for my Surface 1.
Oh, really? That's nice.
Yeah, that's a Best Buy thing, not a Microsoft thing. But yeah,
that's still good. Because they have a trade-in program, too. I saw were giving people $50 gift cards towards the Surface Pro 3.
Yeah,
I got to show you the saddest thing in the world. I've been bringing out devices for like an everything must go kind of event. And they're all piled out on a table out there. I have the original Surface Pro, Surface Pro 2. I've got a bunch of RTs. I've got Surface 2. So I hear a crash, and my cat had jumped up on the table, and its back feet kind of slipped on the screen of the original Surface Pro. And when I picked it up, it's like smashed. Do you see how it's smashed?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened to my RT right there.
That makes me sad.
Made me sad.
I was
going
to give this to someone. I was just going to give it away.
Oh.
You know?
Well, you could still give it away. They just won't be as happy.
I assume that fixing the screen on this thing would be very expensive.
Yeah. And it says very explicitly, no cracked screens, no water damage. So
right.
You can't trade those kind of things in. But there you have it. And you know what was funny when we wrote about this? So many Apple users were incensed. They were like, How dare they do this?
Desperate do you have to be? You know, I guess that's one way to look at it. I mean, I think I like this. Getting people to switch to me makes sense. Like,
me too. And they were targeting MacBook Air users with the Surface Pro 3. That is why they made this trade-in offer the offer that it is. It's just, it's not meant to insult anyone. It's not meant to be laughable.
I mean, if it does, it's all the better. Like, hey, but, wasn't the point.
No, but people got really crazy over it. And I was like, wow, really? Okay. Don't trade your MacBook Air in if you don't want to. That's okay.
How dare they?
How dare you tempt me with your little paltry little offering.
Your clicking device.
How dare you?
Yeah, you know, if somebody objects to it, that sounds like they maybe they're thinking about it.
Oh, stop my hand. It can't. It's reaching.
For someone who loves Apple so much, you're awfully focused on the Surface Pro 3. Jeez. Okay. Sorry. A little touchy there, are we?
Yeah.
Now, there's some sort of back and forth in the show notes here that I don't really understand, so maybe you can elaborate more.
Right. We need little comic book characters.
Yeah. Because there's apparently a mini Mary Jo Foley.
Right.
And she's being taunted, or she is taunting. I don't know what.
Right.
Let's talk about the mini.
Okay. So this was something Paul found that was pretty funny, actually. Microsoft made a guide available for Surface Pro 3, and he downloaded it, and suddenly he said on Twitter, hey, by the way, there's a bunch of references to Surface Mini in this guide.
Whoops!
And yep, there were. And it talked about using the same pen that you use for the Surface Pro 3 with the Surface Mini, which, by the way, they never did actually roll out. And we had heard they were going to roll that out, too, on May 20th, but... Now I'm even more convinced they were going to. So Paul doesn't seem to think it was that.
Well, my point is there's no speculation involved. I mean, that event was for Surface Mini. The Surface Pro 3 we're all so excited about was the sideshow.
The invitation said, what's something? Oh, here comes a little thing. You're going to...
Yeah.
One more little thing.
I mean, I want to be really clear. I know for a fact that this was happening. This is not a... there's no iota of doubt. This is a fact. So, of course, you know, when this happens, there's all these stories. Oh, Microsoft, you know, blew it. You know, they admitted there was a Surface Mini. You know, like, I don't need that, you know, to know that it was happening. And the important thing for people to know is that the Surface Mini would have been like the Surface Pro 3. 3x2 screen, the exact same pen, the exact same writing characteristics, the exact same OneNote integration. I had heard about these features for Surface Mini. I heard very little about Surface Pro 3. So when they were announcing Surface Pro 3 at that event, I was like, wow, this is what they were going to do for Surface Mini. What's going on here? And they were going to have both devices. They did just cancel the Mini.
Yeah.
Question is why they canceled the Mini.
Well,
we heard that Satya Nadella himself made the decision and that it was because they decided it wasn't differentiated enough and they really needed Office Gemini, which is a touch first version to make this thing
and
work.
Remember too, you know, Surface Pro 3 is a fairly unique device. Surface Mini, you know, there are a bunch of mini tablets, some of which are very good. You know, Dell Venue 8 Pro, the ThinkPad 8 is fantastic, and some others as well. And they have some range of capabilities when it comes to pens. I mean, some of them aren't actually that great, but some of them are very good as well. And I think that the new kind of mantra over on Surface, as Satya Nadella said that day, was we don't want to compete with our partners. And I think that that device would have been too close, whereas Surface Pro 3 was kind of a step beyond what others were doing. And so that one was okay to do.
Yeah. So in the show notes, when Paul said, not that we needed it, I thought you meant not that we needed the mini Surface.
Oh, no, I meant
not that we needed the hint.
I don't need proof. That's why I said,
I thought it was funny that this was in the book because you could see it for the cut and paste job that it was because there was a Surface Mini user guide and a Surface Pro 3 user guide. And they were clearly reusing the part about the pen because that functionality is identical between the two devices. It doesn't matter if it's exactly the same text as long as they correctly identify the device.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, with the Surface Mini, you could do the double click thing to take a screenshot. You could do the single click to go to OneNote. That stuff was all going to happen in Surface and Surface Mini as well.
Yeah.
Can you still download that guide?
No, you can, but they took all the references out now.
I have the original.
Before you use your Surface Pen the first time, you'll need to install the quadruple A battery, which I've never heard of, by the way.
Someone wrote me that just today. I got a comment about that. You know that a quadruple A battery doesn't exist. And I'm like, well, there's one in my Surface Pen, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I know double A, I know triple A, never heard of a quadruple A.
That's what it says on the battery. Okay. So.
Yep, it does.
You'll pair your new pen with Surface Mini a little later during the setup, which is confusing and implies that. I get it. You'll pair it later. I get it.
Yeah. It's a Bluetooth pairing, basically.
Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So this isn't.
But I was excited about the Surface Mini. I wanted to have something.
By the way, I do too.
I wanted to see if it could replace my paper notebook and pen. I like the idea that it would be that size and weight, and that's why I was excited.
The one thing I love about the iPad Mini is its form factor. That machine is probably, I guess, 3x2 or whatever, but the Surface Mini would have been very close to that. And obviously, that's one of the great things about the Surface Pro 3 is the aspect ratio of the screen. It's neat. And I also wanted that device. So
here is the quadruple A alkaline battery.
Yeah.
Wow. That's look how small they are.
They're like batteries, but they're mini.
And they're particularly used in styli. Styli.
Yeah.
That's the use for them. So there. And you can get rechargeable quadruple A's, in case you're interested.
I don't know what I'm going to do if this battery ever dies.
I know.
It will happen when you're away from, you'll have no way to find this battery
where
anywhere.
Can I buy one of those?
Yeah.
Well, here's a 60-pack this will last you until you're dead.
With all of the weight you're saving by owning a Surface Pro 3, you can afford to you can carry these batteries around with you.
Yeah, a 60-pack is $18.49, Amazon Prime. Wonder how much that weighs a pound. It is exactly the same as a Surface Pro.
Right.
All right. I think we've said enough about that. Let's move on. Windows PCs versus Windows devices. Is the Surface a device or a PC?
It's a PC, Leo.
Or is it a device?
Although my argument for Surface Pro 3 is that in many ways, you could say that this is the first true hybrid PC in the sense that it is, in fact, a full-powered PC, core chipset, et cetera, pro version of Windows, manageable with Active Directory and all that kind of stuff. But it has that hybrid sleep state. You know, it's got that connected standby thing, which is until now has been associated with devices only. The reason I kind of mention this stuff is because I like to do a lot of navel gazing when it comes to computers and PCs and stuff. But and I think I wrote an article about this. I think people misunderstood it, which is that, you know, from the perspective of an IT pro audience, PCs and devices are in fact very different. Because if you bring iPhones or Android devices, iPads into your environment, the way that you manage them is completely different than the way you manage your traditional PC.
You can bring your own device, but not your own PC.
Yeah, well, the truth is with Windows 8 Plus, you could actually do it with PCs too. I don't see a lot of that going on yet, but the difference from a management perspective is basically mobile device management versus traditional, you know, Active Directory style policy application and so forth. And that stuff is very powerful, but it's very complex, whereas mobile device management is not super complex and not super expensive and applies to a much wider range of device types. Surface RT or any Windows RT device, the only way you can manage that is with MDM, whereas a Surface Pro device is a PC. You can manage it either way. You could manage it both ways, in fact. And I think that's the real distinction. I think this is a subtlety that a lot of people lost, unfortunately, when they read about it on Windows IT Pro. But that was really the point I was trying to make, that Surface Pro 3 is a computer. Even though it looks like this cool tablet thing, it's a computer.
Very important.
You know how you can tell, Leo? Because it has a fan.
It has a fan.
that's the real
thing. Does a device have a fan? I think
this
not.
This is what it sounds like.
Does a device sound like that?
No.
I think
silent.
Not.
Silent.
There you go.
Silent.
Well, I'm glad we clarified that. Paul, did you shave this morning?
Leo,
Probably had, like many men, you eschew the shave because it's painful. It's unpleasant. It's not something you look forward to, and it is pricey. With a price of what is a Gillette Fusion, like $4 a blade or something? It's ridiculous. You may not even be able to afford a shave every day. I have to spread my shaves out. I'm on a budget. Thank goodness there's Harry's. Harry says you don't have to pay $2 or $3 a blade. Blades are so expensive now at the drugstore, they lock them up. Why don't you do it right? Go to harrys.com, and you will never dread shaving day again. Harrys.com is fabulous, a great shave. And I mean a great shave. In fact, I've got the Harry's. I think this is a Winston kit. They have the Truman kit and the Winston kit. Let me just show you real quickly the Winston kit and what you get. You get the Harry's Shave Cream, which is the, I'm not kidding, this is, I think, the centerpiece of the whole thing. This stuff is the best. It's very minty and fresh, but it's also very creamy. It comes in a tube. You don't have to worry about the environment. No chlorofluorocarbons squirting out of there. You also get a Harry's razor. And you can get that razor engraved, by the way, on the Winston. Beautiful metal handle. And by the way, these are really nice five-blade razors manufactured at Harry's plant in Germany, where the best knives and blades are manufactured. And you get a few... How many extra blades? Let me see. Let's just open this up. Two extra blades. And then, of course, you can get the blades on subscription regularly. Steve Gibson can't stop talking about Harry's. Actually, I had to ask him, can you please stop talking about Harry's? He loves Harry's.
Does he use it just on his face? Because he's got kind of a...
He's kind of an
area.
He's a hirsute fella. You can use it for manscaping, absolutely, or ladyscaping. It's up to you. Blades are $2 or less. The Winston set, $25. The Truman set, he actually liked the Truman set. He preferred the plastic handle of the Truman set, which comes in four colors, by the way. So if you've got a busy household with many little shavers, each can have their own distinct color. German engineering, yeah! Quality construction, you bet! And that delicious Harry's cream. I want you to visit Harry's right now. Harry's. Somebody said, you're saying it like Mary. Or like Harry, like you're Harry. It's Harry. Harry's, I don't know, harrys.com. You get $5 off your first order if you use the offer code Windows. harrys.com. And trust me, once you go Harry's, you never go back. What are you laughing at?
Laughing at that segue. Paul thought you were insulting his shave.
He looks fabulous.
I deserve it, but it's okay.
No, I'm not insulting anything. I'm just saying.
Leo, how long have we been doing this podcast? 7 years?
Ages.
It's embarrassing for me to admit that it's almost always a surprise when it's time for me to start recording the show.
What?
Yeah, it's strange.
What? I got to do a what?
Well, today was like the Google thing, and suddenly it was 10 of 2, and I thought, oh, man, I actually have to get ready for this.
It's okay. Okay. Yeah. As it turned out, you had plenty of time.
I don't. And then I had another 45 minutes. I could have shaved. Who knows?
By the way, after the show, we're going to continue the Google talk. We're going to do a This Week in Google, and Gina and Jeff will be in studio because they're at Google I.O. Right now, Jeff is biting his nails as he crosses the Golden Gate Bridge. He's afeared of bridges, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yes. Does not like them one bit.
They should just catapult across the gap.
You see, at the beginning of I.O., they had this weird Rube Goldberg machine. Yeah.
Yeah, which they never alluded to once.
It was stupid.
Right.
And normally they begin on time. They had this thing was, I guess, behind, and then it clicked over to 30 minutes again. I thought, no! And then it released a bowling ball, and there was a trebuchet that fired, and it was just weird.
I thought that whole thing was weird, yeah.
It wasn't entertaining. Well, you remember 2 years ago, Sergey Brin parachuted in with glass on? And
yeah, no, but this time they did like that web API thing with all the graphs. That was good, too. Whoa! Yeah, that was tough.
They did, though, I think, fire a shot across the bat. Look, Apple offers storage. Google offers storage. Amazon offers storage. Microsoft and the OneDrive business offers storage. And the prices, we are in a free fall. Are we not in a price war?
Yep.
Sure.
Definitely are.
Microsoft's repriced OneDrive.
Are they going to have to reprice it again?
Well, $10 unlimited, $10 a month. Yeah, I guess so.
$10 a month, though. What is, OneDrive for business, what does that cost? It can't be $10 per month, can it? It's got to be less than that. Plus, you get Office.
Well, you get Office.
OneDrive for business is part of Office 365.
And a terabyte.
Yeah.
And as I said, I think a terabyte is really unlimited.
Yeah.
I think they
Microsoft already let you have the 1 terabyte for as part of your Office 365 for business subscription.
Right.
And this week they said, if you have an Office 365 home or personal subscription, you're going to get a terabyte included with that as well. Right. So what's really interesting is if you have the home version, you can have it for up to 5 people. So you're going to get a terabyte for each of the people who are part of the subscription. So that's really
you could buy that for yourself and just use 5 different Microsoft, I almost call them Windows Live IDs, Microsoft accounts, and then get 5 gigs of online storage that way, or 5 terabytes of online storage.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they can reprice again. Somebody's saying in the chat room that the it's a little misleading to say $10 for unlimited. That's only, he says, and I have to verify this, if you sign up 5 people.
Oh, is it really?
So it's unlimited if you for 50,
so it's for a business $50 for at least. Okay.
But I'll have to check that.
I didn't know that either.
But that's I have.
I think the Microsoft offering, as we understand it today, is extremely competitive. Like Mary Jo was saying, the home versions, home and professional, and university as well, provide 1, 2, or 5. Installs of full Office on Windows or Macs, Office for iPad, eventually Office for Android tablets and Windows tablets, unlimited installs of Office Mobile. We get access to the Office Online web apps and all the collaboration stuff that goes through there, the additional storage on OneDrive. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's $10 a month, right? Or
$99 a year. If you're not an Office 365 subscriber, you still are going to get now 15 gigs of storage for free. It used to be 7. Right.
Oh, that's good.
Yep.
Yeah, so here's the deal. It says get as much storage as you need. You can buy unlimited storage for $10 per user per month. Accounts with fewer than 5 users get 1 terabyte per user.
Okay.
Ah,
so
there you go.
That's a big difference.
So by the way, I mean, what you're getting here is just storage.
Right.
So I don't know. I would argue that the Microsoft thing is actually better.
This is really just, it's perception.
Sure.
It's that perception thing, ultimately, and not so much reality.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft is using storage as a carrot to try to get more people to subscribe to Office 365. That's what's really happening, right? They're using it as, hey, if you do this, we're going to give you this, this, and this. And now storage is the latest thing you're going to get as part of that.
So what's the carrot on the Google side? I mean, what's the point? Just to get you in the ecosystem? I mean,
yeah, because then you're buying apps. You're now using Google for business, basically.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean, it's the same reason Amazon, if you buy the new Fire phone, gives you unlimited storage for your photos.
Sure.
To get you in the ecosystem.
I mean, good luck filling up a terabyte of photos. Yeah. You know, it's not going to happen.
I put all my photos on Google. I have 1.3 terabytes or something like that, and that's not even close. It's like a few hundred gigabytes. A gigabyte is a lot. We forget how much a gigabyte is.
4 years ago, I got my first Windows phone, the prototype phone in June or July, whenever that was, 2010, and immediately started saving automatically every photo I took at the time to SkyDrive. And I probably have 7,500 photos in there now. I can assure you it's not a terabyte. I mean, it's not every photo I've ever taken in my whole life. But I mean,
all the photos I've ever taken in my whole life, and I started doing digital photography in 1999, are fewer than 50 gigabytes.
Yeah.
That's 50 or 60,000 photos. So a terabyte, it's hard to use a terabyte. Yahoo gives you a terabyte, by the way, free as well.
But on Flickr.
It's just an imaginary amount. It's
I'm going to see how much mine is. I'm curious. But it's, it's not going to be, it's not going to be terrible. Yeah.
No. I know that I back up my photo library on terabyte USB drives. And it, you know, right. I'm not going to run out for quite some time.
Yeah. And we should add, too, that if you're somebody who sometimes has storage needs that are just for a limited time, like say you wanted to put wedding photos up there and then take them off later, Microsoft cut the price of buying extra storage, too. So you can buy 100 mm-hmm. gigs extra for $2. It used to be $7.49. Or you can buy 200 gigs extra per month for $4.
Right.
So that's kind of handy, too, for some people.
Somebody's also go ahead.
No, that's right.
Somebody's also pointing out in the chat room that you pay $10 whether you use a megabyte or a terabyte or 20 terabytes.
Yes,
the vast majority of users will never use a terabyte. So it's very, you know, that's misleading. I think it's not. I think free $10 for unlimited bandwidth or unlimited data is. He also points out at Amazon you pay for what you use on Amazon.
Yes. S3 and by the way, so the interesting thing about that is back in the Windows Home Server days, I installed I believe it was a plugin of some sort that backed up Home Server at the time, and I did it just for photos because I wanted another place for photos to S3. And the at some point that plugin stopped working, or I moved to a new version of Home Server, or eventually Windows Server, whatever. And so that whatever that amount of photos is, I'm not sure how much space it takes up, but whatever it is. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever, it was $15 a month. And then it was kind of $12 a month. And then after time, it was $8 a month. And it has gone down consistently because I've never added to it. So I'm not paying any money for transferring data.
Right.
It's literally just storing the same amount of data.
Right.
I just got the most recent bill. It was a little over $2.
Isn't that great?
And that's amazing, right? I mean, that's a very concrete example of how that kind of, you know, the price of storage has gone down. Yeah, it looks like I have 88 gigabytes of photos. It's,
I presume, paralleled roughly the price of hard drives.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does, yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, but that's the Amazon service is interesting because, like you said, you actually do pay for what you use.
Right, you pay for and bandwidth.
And not just storage, but also the bandwidth.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But only for what you use, and it's very S3 is really cheap. And then they have this Glacier thing, which is even
which
cheaper
is
still.
Something I looked at again because the point of that is you're not transferring a lot. You just you're using it the way I'm using this. It's kind of like deep storage.
Right. Microsoft's using OneDrive storage as a way to get you to do Office 365, of course, especially consumer because you get how much storage you get with an Office 365? A terabyte, right?
No, it was 30. 20 gigabytes before?
Oh, okay. What is it now?
A terabyte.
It is a terabyte. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good deal. And I pay $8 a month, something like that? You know, this is all aimed at Dropbox. Everybody was so afraid that Dropbox was just going to eat it up. And they have not dropped their prices.
And that's the thing that amazes me. They are the least affordable of all of the options. And they're very popular. And I don't...
Well, because apps use the Dropbox API. So I would love to get rid of Dropbox because I don't use it for anything except that all the apps...
I mean, Google must offer this on Android. And maybe that was one of the things Raphael was talking about. I mean, Microsoft offers it on the Windows side, obviously, through OneDrive. Apple would be crazy not to offer this through iCloud on their platforms. I mean, everyone's going to do this, and that cuts Dropbox right out of the equation beyond the fact that a bunch of companies are already using it.
Or Box.net. I mean, they're also... Yeah. In there, I do think that boy, it changes fast nowadays.
Yeah,
how do you stay on top?
Integrating with platforms is one way. I mean, I think the cool thing. In fact, this is my tip this week is the way that Microsoft integrates OneDrive with all platforms.
Right.
You know, and also tying back to what we were talking about earlier with Microsoft and the way they view all these other platforms. You know, OneDrive isn't just the backup platform for Windows. They've integrated it with iOS. They've integrated it with Android. And that's one way. I mean, I think it's actually really smart. Because, man, moving data between cloud services, yikes. Nobody wants any part of that. Your data's there. It's there. That's why I still pay Amazon $2 a month.
Everybody, you know? Yeah. No, right. Because it's there. So you don't want to move
it. It's there. Yep.
You wrote a really nice article on Office 365 and understanding what the difference is between business and consumer. And you needed to write an Office 365 field guide.
Right? That's a good idea, Leo.
Yeah.
Actually, the thing I need to write, and I've been meaning to do this for a while, is like a free kind of mini guide to the Microsoft account, because really at the heart of all this stuff is Microsoft account.
Yes,
and people are amazingly confused by this, and for understandable reasons. I don't mean to call that out like they're idiots. I mean, it's very confusing. And you as an individual could go to office.com and peruse the various Office 365 subscriptions. And if you chose to buy a personal account or a home account, you would sign in with your Microsoft account and you would get going. If you chose to start out like a small business or a small business premium account, oddly enough, you would sign it to create that account. You would sign in with a Microsoft account, but then you would create like what's called an organizational account. It would be like a custom domain, because it's not like a Hotmail account or an Outlook.com account. It's for your custom work domain. Or if you worked for an employer who was using Office 365, you would get, you know, bob@work.com, whatever it was. That account is not a Microsoft account. I mean, and you could make it a Microsoft account. And then you get into this screwy world where with your single account, you could log into office.com and it will ask you which one you intend to use. And you'll get access to OneDrive over here. You'll get access to OneDrive for Business over here. Both of them have different storage allotments and they're different services and have different. It's crazy. Like it multiplies out into this kind of spasm of complexity. And I honestly think they could have just solved a lot of problems by just naming these things different. It's really confusing to people. OneDrive versus OneDrive for Business. Outlook.com versus Outlook web app, or whatever we're calling it this week.
They've done this all along, though. They did this with Windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
They have a hard time. They have a hard time not proliferating products, you know, with the same names. I don't know why that is.
Because there's so few names in the world left.
And because they want to make you think this is a blended world, that there's no dividing line between business and home. Right.
Oh, there's a huge line.
For me, too. But yeah,
huge line. It's confusing. And I think you brought this up the other day, because Mary Jo talks about the Mac all the time. You probably don't know this, but I can't get her to stop talking about the Mac. Mary Jo mentioned to me the other day that...
You want to be a Mac Break Weekly, Mary Jo? We could use somebody like you.
That would be insatiable hilarious. About the Mac.
If I understood what she was saying, OneDrive for Business client is not available on the Mac yet.
Nope,
right?
It's not.
That's weird.
And you wouldn't believe how many people want it.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask for it. So.
And what that would do is give you the ability to sync your OneDrive for Business / SharePoint Online document folders to your Mac. You can do that on Windows. There's a OneDrive client on the Mac, as there is on Windows, which is a the consumer service. Same capabilities, different service, but not OneDrive for Business. That's got to be happening any day now. I'm really shocked that's not available.
They say before the end of the year. That's all we can get them to say.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because that version of OneNote that you're using on the Mac, you could have OneNote notebooks in OneDrive for Business / Office 365 Business, whatever, / SharePoint Online. You could have OneNote notebooks on OneDrive Consumer Service, which is where ours is, and you could mix and match them in the app. Actually, you could probably still do that without having a client. I'm thinking about it. It's so complex. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's because OneDrive for Business is really not OneDrive at all, right? I mean, that's the core problem here. It's Groove Workspace. That's what it is. It's renamed Groove Workspace. So I am not clear how much you can actually go back and forth between the two. I've never tried it, obviously, but you're saving something on SharePoint, then you have the consumer OneDrive, and how easy or difficult is that
both,
to go back?
And it's confusing.
Yeah.
They are completely different technologies. I mean, to the end user, they work similarly. I mean, you can access both in your file system. They work like normal folders. They both have their own unique sync problems, which is always hilarious. In fact, I spent a night recently. My wife and I were watching TV, and I was yelling at my laptop because neither one of them was syncing correctly on the laptop, and that's always a good time. So you'll have that to look forward to when that comes to the Mac. I wish they would either consolidate them technologically and allow you through the desktop clients to link to multiple accounts, which would be amazing, as well as shared accounts, which is necessary, or, you know, brand them differently and stop trying to pretend they're the same thing, because they're not.
Yeah, that branding differently is never going to happen.
I know.
Sadly.
Sadly.
I know.
Sadly. Speaking of Office 365 and the cloud, did Exchange go down? What happened there?
Yesterday was a bad day. So on Monday, Link.
It's a good thing you use a Mac. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's lucky I have a Mac as a backup, plan B. So Link Online went down on Monday for several hours. That's Microsoft's unified communications service. And I didn't know because I don't use Link Online. But people started tweeting me, hey, Link Online's down. And it was down for multiple hours because of, I think it was a network. What did they say?
It's enterprise-level video conferencing. We looked at it, and there was some prohibitive feature.
Oh, really?
You had you needed certificates.
An on-prem server kind of thing.
It was not practical for us for some reason. I forgot why. Yeah. Well, Russell told me. But it's really an enterprise solution.
It is. Yeah. It's for like enterprise video conferencing, enterprise IM, voice over IP. It does all these things for enterprise users. And there's an on-prem version, and then there's the cloud version. The cloud version is the one that went down in North America due to network routing infrastructure issues, we found out. So it was down for many hours. Yesterday, Exchange went down. Exchange Online. For people in a number of users in North America.
And did you hear the story behind this, by the way?
Which part?
So, well, the irony here is that actually Exchange Online never went down. It was up the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But what it was doing was marking every single message that everyone received as spam.
Oh.
So you were sitting there checking your email, wondering why you weren't getting an email. Your email was doing great. It just wasn't where you wanted it.
That's not good. Could they roll that back, or am I lost my...
No, we got our email later. I had a whole bunch all of a sudden at the very end of the day all shoved into my inbox.
It's not spam after all.
Yeah. But what was frustrating was some mail was coming through and some wasn't. So you didn't necessarily realize you were down. And then I started sending myself test messages. I'm like, wait, my mail's not working. And then when my mail did come through, a lot of my mail was from readers saying, do you know Exchange is down? I don't know how many messages like that I had. But yeah, Paul's right. It didn't technically go down. Although I did see some people saying they could never sign in. So I don't know if that constitutes.
They have an uptime guarantee, so that thing never went down.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We don't go down. We bounce all your mail, but we don't go down.
99.99, baby. Four nines.
Two things I want to say about this. One is Microsoft's dashboard, health service dashboard, was indicating everything was great for most of yesterday.
Oh, that's not good.
Because it was great. Email was slipping right through there.
Yeah. And their updates were very sporadic, I have to say. They could have done a better job on updating people about what was going on. And then as one IT pro guy said, you know what? When my servers go down, my users yell at me. But when Office 365 goes down, my users don't know. And they still yell at me. They don't yell at Microsoft. They're mad at me because they assume it's me. And so it's almost like no win, right?
I actually think that is still a win for that guy because...
You do?
Yeah, because all he has to do is send out a message that says, it's Microsoft.
Yeah, but who's going to believe him?
Mm. I told you not to go to cloud.
It's Microsoft.
Exactly.
It's the cloud, baby. You see?
If you would just listen to me.
Brian for LLP says, you couldn't log in if you didn't have a valid and non-expired authorization token. So if you had shut down Outlook, you wouldn't get back in because it couldn't recreate.
But that very premise is ludicrous because nobody shuts down Outlook. So
why would you ever have a problem?
Yeah. So I don't know.
Brian, that guy Brian for LLP was the main guy helping me out yesterday and figuring out what was going on.
Thank you, Brian.
He was great. He was sending me pictures of his dashboard because he was getting a lot of status updates that other people weren't getting for some reason. So thanks. That was great.
Nice. Nice.
You rock, Brian, for LLP. This show's for you. Have a bud. Or a good beer.
Please don't have a bud.
Have a craft beer.
Have a craft beer. A craft beer, yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't a good couple days, but luckily today SharePoint Online didn't go down. I was kind of thinking that was going to happen because that's the third piece of Office 365, Link, awesome. SharePoint, right, and Exchange.
Right. Get all three legs of the stool.
Why not? We were busy upgrading all of your accounts to 1 terabyte of storage, and it turns out we don't have enough hard drives.
We'll be right back after this visit.
Hi, Amazon, can we order 11,000 1 terabyte drives, please?
So, yeah, that's all we know about that non-outage, whatever you want to call it.
Nice.
We do have a much better beer coming up in just a little bit, the back of the book, our picks, our tips, and so forth. Before we do that, though, let's talk about the new Android phones from Microsoft.
I'm going to let Paul rant first.
I was literally just going to say, Mary Jo should talk about this because I'm still
a little
reclamped about
this
one.
Angry. It's called the X2.
I'll start it out and then you can chime in. How's
there
that?
You go.
So we kind of knew this was going to happen. All signs were indicating Microsoft was going to announce a second generation family for this X2 handset, which runs on Android open source platform with Microsoft services replacing a lot of the Google services. And yes, they announced it. Nokia X2. It's a slightly bigger display, better processor. This way, it's hopefully going to eliminate some of the performance problems that were in the first generation of the X family phones from Nokia. But here's a couple interesting points. One is, if you have one of the original Nokia X1 first generation phones, I think they're called the X, the XL, and the Plus, you cannot upgrade to the new version of the software/firmware that's running on these phones. It's not going to work on your phone because it's hardware dependent. So Microsoft has said that they're going to bring some of these enhancements to the first generation phones, but you're not going to get the X2 platform. And there's some enhancements around the notification center and a few other good pieces of software that you might have wanted. Second is, the default browser on these X2 phones is Opera, which I find really interesting because,
oh my God.
Obviously,
hey, it could have been worse. Could have been sleep near.
IE doesn't run on Android, so that's why it's not IE. But I thought Opera was a really crazy choice because if you remember who started the whole browser ballot fight against Microsoft,
Opera.
That ended up in them having to do that. Opera.
but seriously, who else? They're not going to use Chrome.
Yeah, they're not going to use Chrome.
They can't. I don't think they can use Chrome.
Probably can't use Chrome.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know who else they could have
used.
Yeah,
you're out of options, right? What else is there?
Yeah.
Firefox.
But it was just kind of ironic.
I guess Firefox. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it Opera Mini or Opera Micro?
Oh, I don't know.
Are those still a thing? They used to do different versions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to use Opera Mini because it caches everything and breaks SSL. So that's a bad choice.
But it's fast.
But it's fast.
It's fast. Yeah. I don't understand this X thing. I
know. You're a hater. I'm not a giant fan of Microsoft doing this, but I understand why they're doing it at the same time. And a lot of people thought when Microsoft bought Nokia, they were just going to kill these phones and say, okay, we did them. We let them do them. And now that's the end. I think they're going to keep doing them. I don't know that for a fact.
They clearly are going to keep doing them. I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
Someone asked me on Twitter if this was like a fallback, you know, that if Windows Phone failed completely, like, would this be what Microsoft fell back to? And I suppose you could think, I mean, I don't know, but speculating, I would say, yeah, it's sort of like this nuclear option, you know.
Let me pour some cold water on you to relax you, and let me tell you why I think they're doing this.
I'll meditate while you do this.
What do these phones run? They run the new generation of consumer services that are very important to Microsoft. They run Outlook.com. They run OneDrive. They run Skype. They have OneNote. They have Yammer, right? And if you look at where is Microsoft looking ahead as to where they're going to make their money in the future. It's not in operating systems. They're going to be giving away Windows more and more and more. And so they're going to make money on these services. I think this is why they're doing it. They're porting more of their software and services across platforms onto iOS, onto Android. Maybe they're going to have it for the Fire Phone. Who knows?
But
that's why they're doing it.
You're right. I mean, you're obviously right. But they're already porting to iOS. They're already porting to Android. They already have Windows clients. Why would you add another thing to the mix? I mean, they already make Windows Phone. Windows Phone runs wonderfully on those very devices, that type of hardware, arguably better than Android. It supports dual SIMs, which is a big deal for these phones. I just don't understand the value proposition. Like, why they have to – this thing just came out in February, and what you just said is that there's this X2 user experience, whatever it's called, that will not be backported to the devices that just came out in February. This thing, it's not even a year old. I mean, I find this whole thing to be bizarre.
It's bizarre. It's also, I think, partially a disjointed thing because Microsoft didn't own Nokia when they were first building these phones, and now they own them. And and these were being built probably before Microsoft actually took possession of the Nokia handset business, I would think.
Yep, I think so.
So that's why this is all kind of disjointed at this point, I think. I'd also say I believe part of the reason they're doing this is because some people think or believe they want an Android phone. They kind of recognize that experience. They see those buttons. It's it's Android.
But it's not that experience. I mean, it's a different user experience.
I agree.
I think when people say, I want an Android phone, what they really say is
the apps.
Right. I want Google Play Store. I want Google Maps. I want and Google Now and all those great services. I mean, choosing a phone like that, I mean, I don't know that I would quibble with too much. Choosing this thing, it's like, what is this? This is even the Amazon phone arguably makes more sense than this. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they tweak how this looks, what it works like, if they just say, let's see.
What if it does start to look like Windows more and more? You know?
I know.
I think also, didn't Google announce today Android One, which is a $99 platform that manufacturers can just turnkey?
Well, $99. The interesting thing about that, by the way, was the phone they showed off was a phone from the same, I think, Micromax. It was the Indian company.
Yeah, that's right.
That also announced Windows phones last week. And if I'm not mistaken, their base level Windows phone was also $100.
Right. Well, that's the maximum price. You have to have dual SIMs. You have to have FM radio. There's just certain things you have to have for these markets.
Microsoft's doing it as well. Yeah.
But I mean, you're faced with those two phones. Wouldn't you pick the one with Google services?
Yes. Yes. So the AOSP type offerings are not necessarily all that viable, which is, I think, one of my issues with this X.
I mean, that's the point. That's what Google's ensuring by doing this Android One. It's like
they've just made it worthless.
Your first Android phone. Why should you buy anything else?
Right.
Why buy anything less?
Isn't it a reference design, though? Is that what those are?
I believe it is. And Parmi Olsen, who was from Forbes, who was our contributor, said this as well. This is basically a turnkey. Other companies do this too. Yeah. A turnkey image that it's kind of like a reference.
Microsoft does it, right?
I was going to say this doesn't get a lot of press. That's what I said to Raphael when they announced that. This is exactly what Microsoft does with Windows Phone. If you were wondering why every Windows Phone was so consistent, it's because there is, in fact, a reference platform for Windows Phone.
Right.
Or actually multiple reference platforms.
But this makes a lot of sense. So you're a budget phone manufacturer in India or China. You can probably it's free or certainly inexpensively get this OS, put it on the phone, make a phone, $100 phone that has a market. And it supports the things you need, FM radio, SIMs, all that stuff, dual SIMs, all that stuff. This sounds like a good idea.
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously Microsoft can advance this platform in the same way it did Windows Phone. You know, they have the store, they have apps and the platform, and it's Android apps, so it's probably pretty easy to port them. They have a music store and email and storage and yada, yada, yada. They have all this stuff. So it's all there, but
Google's going to aggressively combat anybody doing Android without Google, whether it's Amazon, Microsoft, or some Chinese cheapie.
Yep. Yeah, actually, right. And you know, I'm going to go back over the Google stuff and eventually write something. I actually do think that announcement was one of the bigger deals from today's event.
Yeah. Well, certainly if you're talking about the X2, it is.
Yeah, yeah. True.
I thought yesterday was supposed to be a big Windows Phone 8.1 launch day. What the heck happened?
Wrong again, Laporte.
I just keep lobbing those softballs over the plate for you, Paul.
Yeah, this was
a lot of people
crazy.
Did, right?
I know. So many people were reporting. So June 24th is the launch of Windows Phone 8.1, right?
But tell them why would people say that? Like what would possess someone to believe that this was the day where Microsoft just
what the hell
set it loose on the earth? Like why do people think that?
Okay, so here's why people thought it. Microsoft has a lifecycle support page that they update regularly where they say, this is when we have an arbitrary start date. This is the start date for when we're going to count to how long we're going to support something. So Microsoft put in the start date chart June 24th. And they didn't put it in there because it was meant to be a launch.
Right.
They put it in there just as like, okay, we know that pretty soon Windows Phone 8.1 and the Cyan firmware is going to start rolling out. It wasn't meant to say there is going to be a launch on this date or that Verizon or AT&T was going to start rolling out the operating system update to customers. It didn't
arbitrary is the right word to use. That's exactly the way I say it.
Yeah.
Because Microsoft always launches new Windows Phone releases on the third Thursday of the month, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or whatever that was, the third Tuesday.
It was crazy. And, you know, so many people are like, well, they never actually RTM'd it. Yes, they did. They RTM'd it in April.
Yep. Long time
ago. And they updated it a couple times.
So what's the holdup here?
This is the way it always works. I think we talked about this. The thing that's unique today compared to every other release of Windows Phone is that we were never privy to the internal parts of it, right?
Yeah.
We, because of this developer preview program, we can get the RTM version right away. We can get the post-RTM updates, which we would never have heard about in the past, even though they happened on every single release. When carriers do okay this update for users, we will get the firmware updates that the handset makers may or may not make. Nokia certainly will. And we will get whatever carrier updates come out as well. We've just never been involved with it this early in the process. It's confusing the hell out of everybody. That day that Mary Jo, the web page that Mary Jo is referring to, the day that that went live, there were stories all over the internet about how Microsoft is going to launch Windows Phone, or perhaps I think some people even said RTM Windows Phone on June 24th. And that is not true. That's just, it was never true.
Yeah. And you know what's making this more convoluted is WM Power User is reporting right now that there's a pilot rollout starting of the Cyan update for Lumia 925 users only in Finland. And they're starting to kind of test that out and see, okay, how's the rollout going to work? And they're doing it on a set number of handsets, only 925s, only in Finland. And so now people are saying, see, that was supposed to happen yesterday because that was June 24th.
Not really.
Next few weeks, we're going to get this update. Everyone.
So it's the next few weeks.
Next few months, I think, would be a better way to say it.
It depends on your carrier. It depends on your handset.
In this millennium, we could pretty much say.
Well, I mean, last summer when they launched the 1020, that was when the black firmware update was part of that phone. It was coming to other phones. And it was when update three or two or whatever the heck it was. It took months. It was months and months and months. That's what happens. And people are freaking out because I have a 920 and I have this phone and how come I don't have it yet? And when am I going to get it? And that's, this is the lovely system we exist in, unfortunately.
Welcome to the world of Microsoft.
That's not Microsoft. It's just the carriers. I mean, it's the
world of cell phones. Yeah. So it's the carriers that are holding it up.
By the way, if you want this thing today, you can get it.
I did.
Buy a new phone.
I did.
Well, I mean, you can get it all.
Get it on a new phone. Right. You don't even have to do that little thing.
Get a new phone.
You can't get Cyan, though, right?
Oh, but not Cyan. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry. Are you sure that Cyan's not on the...
Cyan is not 8.1. Cyan is something else.
It's the firmware.
Cyan is the Nokia firmware.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think Cyan is in the developer preview. I don't think it is.
No, it's not. It's not in the developer preview, you have a 630, don't you?
Yeah, it is on the new phones.
What does Cyan bring me?
The only thing I know about are
camera enhancements, right?
Yeah, the imaging updates.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So my 1520
doesn't. There's going to be there'll be more to it than that, but that's what we know about. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just stretching. It's been a long day.
I know. I want to. Yeah. By the way,
to these.
Yeah, there you go.
You like them,
Urkel?
I'm trying to help you, Paul.
He's Urkeling it up.
I'm trying to get you some non-Urkely glasses. We're going to send you a Warby Parker try-on, and you can find some non-Urkel glasses if you go.
Do you have any that look good with Coke bottle glasses, Leo? Because
you know what? I'm a Coke bottle kind of guy. Basically, what you're saying is you're blind as a bat.
I am blind as a bat.
And my glasses from Warby look fabulous. So Warby, did you see the, God, I loved this, the expose they did on 60 Minutes, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, on Luxottica, the company that dominates now eyeglasses, because they've basically bought everybody from Ray-Ban, Oliver Peoples, and everybody in between, and they've artificially kind of inflated the price of frames. Well, you don't have to buy from Luxottica. And by the way, the reason they can do this is because they own, like, all the vision center places, too. So you go there and you have to buy their overpriced frames. Not anymore. Warby Parker, my friends, Warbyparker. It's an internet startup that is really designed to give you affordable frames. Now, you may say, they do have Warby Parker stores, but not everywhere. And you may say, well, you know, I want to, you know, if I can't find a store near me, how do I try these on? They have the Warby Parker try-on. So what you do is go to warbyparker.com, select from their beautiful lenses, and you can get the home try-on kit. Here it is right here. I'll just show you real quickly. So I've got five frames. I picked them out online, the ones I wanted, and I try them on, and I say to my family and friends, do you like this one? This is not my kit.
And they say, nerd.
Nerd. This is not my kit. But I got some gorgeous Warby Parkers. They do sunglasses, too. And are you ready? You know, you go to one of them other guys, you're talking $300, $400 for a frame. And then you add the lenses, right? Paul, you're spending like $600 for your eyeglasses. These frames start at $95, including the lenses. All right? Now are you going there? These artificial high prices are going away thanks to Warby Parker. And by the way, all the glasses with the prescription lenses include anti-reflective, anti-glare coating. You get a hard case, really nice hard case, cleaning cloth too. This is just so great. Go to warbyparker.com/windows. Pick out five pairs of frames, and Warby Parker will send them to you. You can try them prepaid postage so you can send them back when you're done and pick the one you want. You can even take a photo of yourself in the frames. Whoops. And share them online with family and friends. So get some feedback, right? And then when you send them the glasses back, enter your prescription details, and Warby Parker takes care of the rest. They also do sunglasses, prescription or non-prescription. I love my Warby sunglasses. And this is really nice. They partner with nonprofits like Vision Spring to give a pair of glasses for every pair they sell to somebody in need. They've distributed 1 million pairs of glasses to people in need so far. So you could feel good about this, too. I don't know how they do it. Well, I guess I know. Those other guys are overcharging. WarbyParker.com. 5 days, five pairs, 100% free. And for every pair purchased, a pair is distributed to someone in need. Vision doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. Do something nice for your eyes. Get the free home try-on at WarbyParker.com/windows. And when you visit warbyparker.com/windows, you get 3-day free shipping on your final frame purchases as our gift to you, to thank you and to thank Warby for doing. I think this is just so important that people stop supporting. And if you haven't seen the 60 Minutes pieces on Luxottica, watch it, because they basically admit, it's whatever you'll pay for it. And if you want a pair of Chanel glasses, you're going to pay for it.
Oh, I do.
No, you don't. No, you don't, my friend. WarbyParker.com. They're changing the world. One pair of glasses at a time. All right. Time for the back of the book, my favorite part of the show. This is where we, Paul, I mean, and Mary Jo, not me, give you our favorite Windows tips and so forth. Let's kick things off with Mr. Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
So apparently these apps were just updated, I just found out. But I actually have two tips. So the first tip is about backing up all of your smartphone, actually, or tablet or even PC photos to OneDrive. So if you use Windows Phone, you know that this is an automatic built-in feature. And in the beginning, it was just low-res photos, but now it's full-res photos. If you have a 10, yeah. 20, 15, 20, whatever, you get the full photos backed up automatically to SkyDrive. It's a really cool feature. Less well-known is the fact that this stuff, this functionality is available across platforms. You can do it in Windows 8 dot whatever. You can do it on Android handsets and tablets, and you can do it on iOS devices like the iPhone and the iPad. And it works similarly to the way it does on Windows Phone, but of course you have to install the OneDrive app first, log into your account. You'll be auto-prompted if you want to back up your photos. And the tip that I have is about how to set all that stuff up. And I also explain how on each of those platforms you can turn off, if you want to, the built-in functionality. You can actually leave it on, but you know that Apple devices back up to iCloud and Android devices back up to Google Plus / Picasa / whatever they're calling it this week. But the neat thing about this is for people who use a mix of devices, whatever it may be, maybe you use like an Android phone, an iPad, and a Windows PC, all of those things can be backing up to the same exact place. So you can sit down in the living room, and if you have a an Xbox 360 or an Xbox One or whatever, you can see all of the photos that you took recently, regardless of device type, all in the same exact place. It's kind of a neat thing. And so this is the stuff I was alluding to earlier where, you know, Microsoft alone of all of these, cloud storage backup solutions offers this kind of neat cross-platform support and automatic photo backup, which I think is the big deal. And I'm looking for the Android and iOS... Yeah, there it is. The Android and iOS apps for OneDrive were updated today, and actually it was updated. So I'll have to go look at that. There's a couple of changes
there. Yeah, I turn that on. I mean, I also do it through Google and iCloud, but the fact that you... I mean, I don't mind. Why not have three copies of all your photos?
Yeah.
That's a great thing.
Maybe bandwidth, but yeah, I actually leave it on as well. Yeah.
You could say only during when I'm on Wi-Fi, and then it doesn't use
that. Oh, it's got a drawer now. Isn't that cute?
Very modern.
It's nice. It's
very
nice.
Modern.
It's like it's just like a real Android app. Well, you know, there's an interesting standard there are interesting standards that emerge in apps, and this is one of them. But you know, you pull down and it refreshes.
Right.
For example,
right.
It's like it's like a de facto standard.
Yeah.
One of the other de facto standards is like the little menu button. It's like the three horizontal bars.
They call it the hamburger. Menu. Right.
Yeah. I don't quite.
It's now considered out of date.
Is it?
Yes. I was informed of that.
Okay, so on Android, this is often used to bring in what they call a navigation drawer.
Right, Facebook
which
started
which is a slide-in panel. Yeah, yeah. So the new version of the app does that. That's actually kind of interesting.
It's got their hamburger is a narrow hamburger.
It's
so
a narrow
it's okay.
Hamburger.
It's not a full-sized hamburger.
It's not.
It's a it's a narrow hamburger.
It also has a search button, which I understand is also a common feature of mobile apps.
What is that, a monocle? That search icon?
A monocle.
It's a monocle, right?
Hogan?
Gonna kick?
That's funny.
Yeah. Look at the little monocle.
Okay, so
you tap the monocle.
It's been updated. Yep. I'll look at the iOS version later, but they were both updated.
Nice. Just got it.
So tip number two is about choosing which version of OneNote to launch if you have a Surface Pro 3 and that new pen, because the way it works by default is you click the top of the pen, which used to be an eraser, and it launches OneNote. And it will do that even if you're logged out of the machine. It will appear above the lock screen, which is kind of a neat feature. So you could literally be carrying your tablet around like it was a notebook, like a paper notebook, walk into a meeting, click your pen, and you're taking notes. When Microsoft announced this feature back just a month ago, I guess, it was only OneNote Modern, you know, the mobile app version of OneNote that worked that way. And some people said, you know, I use like the desktop version, and is there a way to make that happen? And they said, yes, we're going to release an update that will enable that functionality. You can choose. And it's weird. It's hard to say this is the update you need to get to make this work, because there's at least two software updates that kind of work together to enable this. But basically, OneNote has been updated, OneNote for the desktop, that is. There has been part of that firmware update has something to do with it that came out for Surface Pro 3. But once your Surface Pro 3 is up to date, if you run the desktop version of OneNote, you'll be prompted to choose your default OneNote experience. If you ignore that or have skipped over it or have chosen poorly, you can actually go to File Options, and there's an Advanced Options part where that option is in there as well. And it lets you choose between the desktop and modern version of the app. So I've set mine to the desktop version because that's what I use. And software pick of the week is an app which you'll tell me has been on iOS for 5 years probably, but it just came out on Windows Phone this week, called Vivino, which is a wine scanner app. And I actually went to a wine dinner last night. So I had an option to use this, or an opportunity to use this. It's a cool app. I have to say it was 50-50 on auto detection. And the way it works is you use the camera from within the app to scan the label of the wine bottle. It searches its database. It spits out what it thinks it is. It was right in the wine tasting. It was right 2 out of 4 times. It was very strange. It was all wines from the same place, which I think might have screwed it up because the labels were all very similar.
I think the database is also not huge. I don't. I've had the same problems. Yeah.
But I think the useful thing about this, aside from the untapped style check-ins that you can do, because you can do all that stuff, you can write notes about it, you can rate it, you can compare it, your ratings to other people's ratings. You see an overall score for the wine, which is kind of cool. I had gone to a wine event a few weeks ago and bought some very expensive wine from a friend of a friend, not off the back of a truck. He actually owns a wine store. But these were bottles of wine that he was telling me normally, would be, depending on the bottle, was $90 to $150. A bottle, and I bought them for less than $70 each. And I actually checked them out on the app, and sure enough, like the really nice one was $150. And you can see that, you can see the actual price in the app. It's cool for that as well. So you don't have to just use it for check-ins. You can, you know, if you bought wine, you walk down and you have a bunch of bottles of wine, you have no idea, is this good? Where did I get it? You can just scan it and we'll tell you how much it costs. It will give you a rating, and that can help you even, you know, with wine that you own and don't understand. Valuable app if you drink wine.
Yeah, I like it. I in fact, the Samsung Galaxy Gear 2, I guess they don't call it mm-hmm. Galaxy, the Gear 2.
It's like the guy from Monopoly. What the guy from Guns N' Roses is going to look like in 30 years.
The Galaxy Gear 2 phone has a Vivino app, so you can take a picture with the watch. So you can take.
I'm surprised the Galaxy phone doesn't have. Have you ever heard of a Van de Cleef tool? Have you heard of
no,
this?
No, what's that?
It's a metal rod that you dip into wine, and it has this is crazy. It has a disc on the end of it that has some mixture of minerals in it. It's like copper and some other things.
The Van de Cleef tool.
The Van de Cleef, and supposedly. I just got one. I'm dying to try this.
I want one.
Supposedly, 2 seconds in a glass of wine, or if you have the big one in a bottle of wine,
yeah,
will age the wine 2 years.
No, it will not.
I know. It sounds like chicanery. I know. But look this thing up.
2 seconds.
Supposedly,
whatever you do, don't stick it up your butt.
Right.
Okay.
That's true of many things. That's just common sense advice.
I'm just saying, but be careful where you put that thing.
I believe it's only if it impacts wine, but I looked this up because somebody mentioned it on Facebook and it sounded like complete baloney, but actually if you go and read reviews and stories about it.
What is it called? The Van de Cleef tool?
Van de Cleef.
Oh, C-L-E-F. Van de Cleef.
Van de Cleef.
Van de Cleef.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would age beer. Some beer is meant to be aged too, and I wonder if it would work on
it. I don't know. I'm dying to. I just got it, so as soon as tonight, we're going to do blind taste test.
All right,
this.
Tell me if it works because I may try it on a beer.
They're pretty expensive. I got the little one, so I got.
I don't see how one that,
just for a glass, you know.
Well, what is the process of aging? It reduces tannins by breakdown by oxygen exposure.
Yeah, I mean you could take a. I saw this in France. It's absolutely true. I had a sommelier in a restaurant in France grab a bottle of wine, and somebody complained about it didn't taste right. And he said, no, this wine's perfect.
I must
and
Van
de Cleef
it.
He grabbed this thing, and he shook the crap out of it like this. He put it down on the table. He did it for like 60 seconds. He put it down. And he said, give that a minute. Try it again. It's going to be perfect. And you know what? It was amazing.
Well, because he oxygenated it. He oxygenated it. Yeah. That is bizarre.
That is bizarre.
But I would love it because I have a lot of wines I can't drink for 10 years. I'm going to be dead.
That's what I'm saying. Just 10 seconds or whatever. We're going to do blind taste tests, like I said, probably tonight.
Please report back with the results of your Van de Cleef.
And you don't want to do, I mean, this could turn like a yellowtail wine into something reasonable.
Let's not get crazy.
You know, maybe. I know. It's crazy. I don't want to get too excited.
You can't put it in a bud and suddenly expect craft beer. No, it just,
no, it's not right. It doesn't turn a bud until like a
Lafite
tomorrow.
Just be careful where you stick it. That's all I'm saying, Paul.
Words to the wise.
Adele. Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo.
Follow that one up, Mary.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to follow that one up. I'm going to give it my best shot, though. And I'm going to talk about something that's really cool. Not as cool as that, but Office 365 Business Roadmap, guys. This is actually very cool. Here's why it's cool. Microsoft now has a website that you can go to if you're an Office 365 user or a potential user, and you can click on different categories of features. They have features they've recently launched, features that are in the midst of rolling out, features in development, and features that have been canceled. And now you have a much better indication of what's actually coming if you're an Office 365 subscriber, for business, that is, not for home. And this may sound like a small thing, but up until now, it's been very cryptic what you were going to get, when you were going to get it. Sometimes features would roll out and people would be like, oh, I didn't know I was going to get that. Whoa, wait, I wasn't ready. So this is going to be a very helpful tool, I think, for a lot of business customers. The other thing that they made roll out as part of this roadmap is a new dog fooding program for Office 365 for business called First Release. So if you're somebody who has been burned perhaps by some of the features being rolled out in Office 365, things have broken, things don't work, things you didn't want your users to have certain things at a set time, you now can sign up for this First Release program. And if you do, you'll have a subset of your users get certain new features before everybody gets them. So you'll have a two-week period when a set of your users can test out some new features that are about to come out. And then you can decide, okay, we're ready, or we'd like to delay this a little, or we have to make some adjustments to our setup so that it's not going to break things. So both of these are really great. Microsoft said they were going to do this back, I think they said it in March or April that they were going to do this. And now it has finally arrived. So you can go on my site. I've got a link to the new roadmap and more information about how to get into the First Release program if you're interested. And I have a bonus pick as well this week, a 2-for-1 kind of pick. If you go on the Microsoft Download Center, and you enter as your search category Windows Phone 8.1 implementation guides, you're going to get a couple of free guides that will be of interest to you if you're a Windows Phone shop that is going to try to implement things like mobile device management, some of these new security policies, and basically all the kinds of things that Microsoft's talking about with Enterprise Mobility Suite. These are free. Microsoft provided. I don't know if there's any hidden references to Surface Mini in these. I didn't check for that, but
get on it. Come on.
Slacker. But these are going to be pretty useful to you if you have users on Windows Phone 8.1 as it rolls out, so that you can figure out how to deploy this in your company and use some of the new enterprise features like S/MIME, some of the new VPN and Wi-Fi capabilities. So check them out. They're free.
Rumor smash. Well, I think we already? No, we didn't.
Nope,
that was another
we
rumor.
Didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't even going to bring this up, but this is another one where I've seen so many people reporting this that I just want to set the record straight. I've seen people, especially in the past couple of weeks, saying that Microsoft has changed its plan and there is now going to be an update 3 for Windows 8.1 that's going to come out next year and push back Threshold, which Paul and I have both heard is spring 2015.
That's a conspiracy theory.
I am here to tell you that is not true.
Yeah.
Wherever you read this, whoever is saying it, don't believe them. I've gone back and checked with my sources who have been correct about what's going on with the Windows 8 rollout schedule. And they said there is no update 3. Threshold is still on for spring 2015. So what's going to happen is we're going to get update 2, which, by the way, is going to be very, very small since Microsoft took out the start menu and they took out the windowed Metro style apps features and pushed those into Threshold. So Windows, the second update, they may not even call this out. They may not even call it update 2. They're just going to push it to us through Windows Update. It's just going to be an extra big patch Tuesday in August is my guess what will happen. And then sometime probably around this fall, we'll see a preview of Threshold. And then spring 2015, there will be Threshold. We don't know if Threshold's going to be called Windows 9, but that's what's supposed to happen. So don't believe any other rogue rumor mongers out there.
Rogue rumor mongers.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, a BAR. Oh, by the way, Paul, I found your, it's called the Clef du Vin.
I got it backwards.
Clef du Vin pocket wine. They call it a tasting tool made out of brushed steel. $60 on Amazon, but they say it matures young wine instantly when dipped into wine.
Yeah.
The patented metal alloy on the tip replicates the aging process, softening the tannins in young wines and improving their taste. Endorsed by Wine Enthusiast magazine.
So it could be real.
I used to listen to this great Gary Vaynerchuk wine podcast.
Sure.
And one of the bits of advice he had was about airing out wine, you know. And he said, listen, if you buy a really cheap bottle of wine and you want it to be as good as it can be,
oxygenate.
Take that thing out in the morning, pour it into a decanter, go to work, come home and drink it. It will be fantastic.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, as good as it could be.
Beer, on the other hand, does not benefit generally from airing out.
Right.
Only some benefit from aging, but not airing out.
I thought beer was supposed to be fresh.
Although, some beers, especially the higher alcohol beers, like some of the stouts, imperial stouts, et cetera, are very good when, or rum-aged beers, very good when you age them.
Right. Yeah. This one, not so much.
This one, not so much. This is more of a summer beer. And this is a beer from Bell's Brewing in Michigan called the Two-Hearted Ale. It's an IPA. It's an IPA I think Paul would like. It's balanced. It's fairly malty.
I enjoy that everything has to be qualified in my taste.
Paul might like it.
He's terrible taste, but he might like this.
No, you know why? Because so many people say you pick IPAs that are all too hoppy. You should pick some more balanced IPAs. So you're not the only one with that taste. And the reason I made it the beer pick was the first time I had this on tap, I really did not like it. I thought it was kind of weak. And I'm like, why does everybody say this is such a great beer? I recently had it in the bottle, and it was so much better than on tap.
Huh.
And so my advice around this beer pick is sometimes if you get a beer on tap and you don't like it, try to find it in the bottle or vice versa. If you don't like it in the bottle, try it on tap. It's not always the same taste. Sometimes it's more citrusy, more malty. There's a lot of different things at play. And it's just an interesting observation that you might like it better one way than the other.
Boy, the scores on this are
It's a great
astounding.
Beer in the bottle. Yeah. It's very, very good. Yeah. I am lucky that I live in New York now because now we have Bell's here and it's a really great brewery.
Beer Advocate gave it 95, which is pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah.
And 9,000 ratings, so it's not, you know, some fly-by-night thing.
No, you can find Bell's around, so it's also fairly getting more easy to find in other places, so that's great, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes a fabulous edition of Windows Weekly. I apologize for the late start, but you guys rocked it, knocked it out of the park, as always. Paul Thurrott is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. His new book, Windows81book.com. And the field guide is what?
Is what?
What do you mean? There's no address for that.
No, field guide books will go to the same place. Windows phone book will go for that book. And I haven't posted a public update for the Surface one yet, but I will do that soon.
Great. And, of course, the Supersite for Windows has everything. Winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Together, they join us each and every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, and talk about Windows. I hope you will join us. We love having you. If you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand versions after the fact at anywhere they have, you know, these shows. Stitcher, our great apps, iTunes, Xbox Music, all of those places, the podcast app on your Windows phone, that kind of thing. Just search for Windows Weekly. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. I'll be in Hawaii, by the way. I'm not sure who's filling in. But
when's this?
Next time.
Next week.
How long are you going?
As long as they'll let me. But unfortunately,
is next week like July?
Fourth of July, baby.
Yeah. And then the week after that, Paul and I are going to be in D.C., but we're going to do Windows Weekly live from the partner conference.
Oh, that's fun.
Our
next show is July 1st or 2nd.
The partner show is the week of July 13th. Sorry.
So it's two weeks hence. Okay.
Yeah, don't.
Sorry.
Paul has missed flights before, so you got
to
be careful.
I'm going to Quebec City in the interim, but I'll miss any podcaster.
All right. Well, thank you, lady. Thank you, gentleman. Thank you all for watching. That concludes this edition of Windows Weekly, Hogan.